Good morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order. Today is Wednesday, March 15th, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members of House Education present are Representative Zach Fansler, Representative Jennifer Johnston, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Dave Tallarico, and myself, Harriet Drummond. We have a quorum to conduct business, and before we begin, you know the drill on cell phones. Our recording secretary is Kelly Burnett, and Alex B.B. Guidice is our LIO moderator. Thank you for helping us out today. Well, I know we've had a few long days on the House floor, so I appreciate everyone being here this morning. I did not want to cancel this meeting because of all the governor's appointments we're hearing from today. They all cleared their schedule for us, and I'd like to keep my commitments. I know that two of our scheduled appointees are currently in Senate Education and will come over as soon as they are able, so we'll have to be a bit flexible with our order today. I see that David Piazza is online, so we will start with him today. Good morning, Mr. Piazza.
Good morning.
Thank you for making yourself available to this committee. Members were sent your resume, so please place your record, your name on the record and proceed with your testimony. And also, excuse me, Representative Parrish is online with us from the Valley, where he must be snowed in. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Piazza.
Thank you. For the record, my name is David Piazza. I am the superintendent for the Southwest Region School District and have been in this role for almost 6 years. I have served the public educational system within Alaska for the past 32 years as a teacher, district-level specialist, district-level administrator, and superintendent. Chair Drummond and members of the House Education Committee, it is my pleasure to be here for confirmation for the reappointment to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission as the superintendent representative. I look forward to continuing on the PTPC as role models providing instruction and guidance to the next generation. It is imperative that teachers and administrators adhere to the code of ethics. The PTPC is important as it provides educators with training to help prevent violations, as well as serves as an avenue for accused individuals to receive a fair and impartial review before any career-impacting sanctions are imposed. The legislature in 1966 established the PTPC as an independent commission to be governed by the members made up by representatives practicing their profession within the K-20 educational community. I will continue to listen to and consider the facts presented and work with the other members to ensure that the integrity of the teaching profession remains at the highest possible level. I look forward to a chance to continue to serve in this capacity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piazza. Do any members have questions for Mr. Piazza? Representative Johnston, go ahead.
Good morning. It's nice to hear your voice. I've heard great things about you, and I've understood that you've done a lot as far as individual learning programs and not just distance learning, but, you know, sort of thinking outside of the box. Could you explain some of your practices?
As a school system, you know, we try to meet as many of a kid's individual needs. We've had some, you know, distance learning programs, like you said, bringing in, software or learning systems that the students can work independently or with help by a teacher. You know, we know that these independent systems are not the be end and, you know, the be all and end all for every student. So there needs to be quality instructors helping those students as they need it. We've implemented some exploratory sessions where students can get more electives. You know, in our small rural schools, we have issues with, you know, trying to meet every student's needs with the limited number of teachers that we could provide at these small schools. So by restructuring some of the time during the day or the calendar, you know, the amount of time in the course of a quarter or a semester, we can provide some week-long intensive hands-on training for students that would be probably considered more electives. You know, they're hopefully away from the reading, writing, math that, you know we need to focus on, but some of these other activities continue to get the engagement back into our schools.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
And I'm sorry for 8 o'clock in the morning to sort of give you a broad question like that. But how? I just looking here, how long have you been on the board?
3 years on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. You're allowed to serve for two three-year terms. This would be my second term.
And do you see, how do I say this? Are we sort of status quo as far as how we certify teachers or what we're looking for with great teachers? Or has that expanded or has it changed at all in your tenure?
I think teacher certification is always striving to put in place the policies and procedures to get the best quality teachers in the classroom. You know, over the years, you've seen those requirements strengthen. You know, teachers now are required to demonstrate basic competencies, you know, through some type of measure. New teachers coming into the state, you know, are required to learn about the state history and the culture that they'll be in, you know, with those two classes that are required. So I think teacher certification has strengthened. You know, the state has strengthened, you know, what they're looking for in a teacher. As far as the professional teaching practices goes, you know, the code of ethics has been reviewed from time to time so that, you know, we're assuring that those procedures, those policies are in place. So that if there is a violation of ethics, that those can be addressed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnston. Any other questions from the members of the committee in the room? Representative Parrish, do you have any questions for Mr. Piazza?
Technical difficulties on this phone, and we're working out right now.
Okay, thank you, Alex. Thank you, Mr. Piazza, for being present with us on the phone this morning. I'd like next to go to Maureen Van Wagner, who is online with us from Anchorage. Are you with us, Ms. Wagner?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, go ahead, please.
My name is Maureen Van Wagner. Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to present myself to you today. I am a special education teacher in Anchorage, Alaska at East High School, and have been an educator for 21 years, 12 of which have been at East High School. I have served as your teacher representative on the PTPC for the past 3 years, and it is my pleasure to continue serving in this capacity.
Thank you, Ms. Van Wagner. I'd like to note for the record that Representative Sponholz has joined us. Any questions for Ms. Van Wagner from the committee? I see no questions. Ms. Van Wagner, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Let's see. Oh, Mr. Kent Runyon, are you on the phone with us?
Yes.
All right, Mr. Runyon, go ahead and put your name on the record.
My name is Kent Runyon. I'm from Nome, Alaska, and I am a high school social studies teacher at Nome Belt High School, and have been there for 7 years. And it's an honor to speak with you this morning.
Any questions for
this
Mr.
This will be my...
Sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Runyon.
I was just going to... This will be my first appointment to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Runyon? I see no questions, Mr. Runyon. Do we have Mr. Representative Parrish online yet? Okay.
Yes,
okay, we're going to take a brief at ease for technical issues. We are back on the record. Karen Perdue is here just come from Senate Education, and we'll be going up to Senate Finance next. Ms. Perdue, if you'd come to the front, place yourself on the record, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Karen Perdue, and I reside in Fairbanks, Alaska, proudly. I am a lifelong Alaskan, and I've spent my early years growing up in the interior. I then I lived about a block from the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus. I grew up. So by the time I got to college, I decided I needed to leave for some period of time, and I went to Stanford University. And then I returned to Alaska, and I lived in Juneau for about 20 years, serving in state government. But in that time, I've traveled extensively in Alaska and enjoyed doing so. I retired in 2014 from going to an office, but I found myself wanting to continue to contribute in our state. And so I'd like to give you a few highlights and reasons why I'm interested in the Board of Regents. I started my work career with a very great teacher, Senator Ted Stevens. I served as a staff person for him in Washington, D.C., and how that happened is I began my work career in high school working for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, and continued to work at the News Miner under publisher C.W. Seddon, who then was a very dear friend of Ted Stevens, and handed me off in terms of job growth. And the mentorship issue is very important in our state. Many of us have been mentored by important figures in our state, and I just think it's important to acknowledge those things. I returned from D.C. and began my career in state government, actually working for Terry Miller, who was the lieutenant governor at the time, was from North Pole, and he was also a mentor of mine. But I ended up staying here and working with four governors, and culminating in my 8 years as commissioner of health for Governor Knowles. Oil was $9 a barrel when I during my first term as commissioner, and it's a sense of impeccable timing that I'm back to work in state government. Needless to say, you learn a tremendous amount during those times about managing and motivating really good people who are very committed to the mission. For long periods of time in our institutions, whether it's a state department or a university, and preserving the focus on the mission during times of hardship. And that is a hard-earned thing to learn, but it's essential to reward and to motivate people who are giving so much, even when it's very difficult in their organizations. I had the opportunity to return to Fairbanks in 2001, and I spent a decade working as an associate vice president under Mark Hamilton at the university, and in that time I worked with pretty much every campus in terms of academic programs, and had the opportunity to see a lot of the campuses. I was involved in expanding the nursing program and also in doing a lot of academic planning in healthcare, in School of Medicine, other critical occupations, and culminated in, along with hundreds of faculty members, writing an academic plan for healthcare that was adopted by the Board of Regents in that time. So I learned the importance of the university to the state's economy and to our economic development. I learned the importance of reversing the brain drain that we were experiencing with young high school people leaving our state. I truly enjoyed working with faculty and administrators. And probably most of all, I really came to appreciate that the students in the university must meet student needs in order to attract and retain students. Higher education is increasingly competitive. Even in our own state, it's not necessary to leave our state to participate in higher education if it fits your schedule, your economic needs, your interests. Students are very skilled consumers, no surprise, and they have legitimate expectations for quality, for ease of use, for good course sequencing, and they can vote with their feet. Even students in the dorms are taking online classes in increasing numbers. So I've worked in large institutional systems, but probably also importantly, I've served on boards of directors. I've served on the Denali Commission and Alaska Housing Finance, for instance. And probably more importantly, I served as the director of a board of hospital CEOs, each of them CEOs. So it's really good to learn about the difference between governance and management. That is a pretty important lesson. The Board of Regents is one of the few boards that's actually listed in the Constitution, and the framers of our state intended the board to be a powerful oversight to a one-state university. That's the language in the Constitution. Two things that are outlined for the board in the Constitution are to guide the policy of the university and hire the president. And the president and the board work in tandem, in my mind, to administer a system that is now comprised of 30,000 students. It's no secret now that the university is facing severe financial pressure and declining enrollment, probably as importantly, declining enrollment. The regents and the president will be making many tough decisions and have made tough decisions over the next several years to responsibly manage the situation. I think the manner that the university is conducting itself and needs to conduct itself is to send a signal to our students that we will continue to be there for them to offer high-quality education and world-class research. As soon as we lose the confidence of our students, our enrollment would decline. So many have asked me why I want to sign up for such an assignment at this time, and I would say that, you know, our university is celebrating its 100th anniversary, and I think Judge Wickersham would be pretty amazed at what we've built to this date, and I think that I would like to participate in this time of some financial difficulty, but also turning point in our university to define a university that can thrive for the next 100 years. Also, as on a personal note, three of our four children have graduated or going to graduate from the University of Alaska. Our youngest is graduating this year with his master's in computer science, and our oldest grandson has enrolled as a freshman at UAS. So the university is in our life. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Perdue. Any questions for the applicant? Representative Johnson, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for coming, Karen.
Thank you.
And I enjoyed listening to your history. It was great times in Fairbanks when we both looked just like we do now. And to enjoy that history I agree with you, it's a privilege. And one of the opportunities we have right now is to continue a vision. And the current president has laid out his strategic pathways. And in that, and this is the Education Committee, one of the restructuring is the Education Department itself. Since you are so integral, and I remember the politics of restructuring the medical program and WAMI moving from Fairbanks to Anchorage and all of the discourse with that, what is your vision for this restructuring? What do you have to say about that?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I'm not briefed very much yet on the university education, the three accredited departments. What I can say about the School of Nursing was there was one very strong School of Nursing accredited at UAA at this time. I'm talking about 2001. But there was a lot of dissatisfaction among employers and students about the lack of access in that program, and so the Chancellor Lind in Fairbanks and Chancellor Pugh in Juneau had decided they were going to start their own programs, and they were well along their way in establishing those accredited programs. And President Hamilton asked them to abate that activity and form an integrated group with the School of Nursing to really truly work out how the School of Nursing could meet the needs statewide. And I would say that the faculty rose to the occasion tremendously. We set a goal of doubling the number of nursing graduates, in 3 years, or 3 or 4 years, I can't remember which it was. And they determined that they would add a third semester to their schedule, and they would embark on a distance program that is now in 16 sites. So we know that program is effective because the students have to pass the national exam at the end, an NCLEX exam, and they almost all do. So it is to the credit of the faculty that this happened. So I would say that if we can at all possible get our faculty in the room and have them set goals for education, and I think there have been goals that the president has articulated for increasing the number of Alaskan teachers by a certain date, and use that stretch goal to see what kind of academic programs they can design and retool. I think some of the more territorial discussion will drop away. That's my hope.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions for the applicant? I'll ask. Thank you so much. I'm excited for the future of education with your skills, and I know that the K-12 system in this state has had a lot of trouble replacing teachers who continue to retire and depart at a substantial rate. So I'm hopeful that you can step right in and help improve that, and that we don't have to count on layoffs to fill spots elsewhere in the state, and can home grow our teachers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are two parts of the job. One is retention. One is recruitment and education. One is retention. Because if there's a hole in the bucket, there's not an endless supply that can be provided. Mm-hmm. So those are really important for the university to engage in. I think they have done quite a bit of work in teacher mentoring, young teacher mentoring, but perhaps there needs to be more targeted areas of that work. I do not know. Thank you.
That's the difficult part. The mentoring program has suffered due to lack of funding on the Department of Education side, so I hope you'll encourage those folks to focus in that direction. Representative Parrish, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask if you're familiar with Professor Abel-Baltitos alternative to the Strategic Pathways Plan, and what you see as the strengths and weaknesses of each.
Madam Chair, Representative Parrish, I know Abel, Bill Tito, for many years, but I actually have not seen his proposal. But I have a sense that it's more decentralization of the university and less in statewide. Is that issue? I'm actually attending a presentation that he's making in Fairbanks in a week, and I'm interested in getting his facts. He's got a lot of information about the university because he's been doing analysis for many years. What I would say is I'd be looking for is the university, I believe the Constitution and the statutes envision a one university system that has got centralized control or management, I guess is the better word for it. I understand that each MAU is individually accredited, but I think the public expects one university as the Constitution states, one state university. So how can the administrative processes strengthen the university at the same time make sure the faculty can do their job? It's a balance. It's not one or the other. I would say that having one legal department, like the state has one attorney general's department and one payroll system and one IT system and one HR system, are probably examples of how we need consistency in the system. And I think the students want one university where credits can transfer and where courses can be sequenced so that you don't end up waiting a whole semester or two semesters for something you need to move on to your degree.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Sponholz, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Perdue, part of the challenge that the university has been experiencing recently is a bit of a disconnect between administration and faculty in terms of sort of, perceptions of the facts and the challenges, particularly as it relates to strategic pathways and the two no confidence votes that we've seen from the faculty associations at two campuses. How do you envision supporting the president because of the division of labor in terms of governance? It's not the Board of Regents' job to manage the internal processes of the university, but how would you guide the president with regard to, addressing that disconnect so we can all move forward as one institution?
Madam Chair, Representative Sponholz, I attended one Board of Regents meeting, and Chair O'Neill created a lot of time on the agenda for discussion with governance, not only with the faculty but with student governance. And I think that was a good start, and I think the pledge is to continue that devotion of time on the board to that dialogue. At the same time, the president has beefed up his engagement on campuses with affected faculty. I don't know if that's going to address the issue, but I think that's the intent. So I think those two measures will help us. I think ultimately, once we are done with the process discussion, there'll still be an issue of money, and decisions may be made. And with the kind of reductions the university has in front of it, there are going to be some very difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. So I think process is really where we need to focus right now, but ultimately we are going to have some very tough decisions.
Hello? Go ahead.
Earlier you were describing the challenge and then the response to the nursing education shortage and the discord within the university over how to meet that challenge. Do you think that were there any lessons learned from that process that you think apply to this? I think it seems to me one of the strategies that worked really well there was involving the faculty in becoming part of the solution rather than treating them as the problem.
Representative Sponholz, the chair, Absolutely. There would have been no way the administrators could have come up with the idea of a third semester or, you know, had the confidence to go to the accrediting agency and say, you know, we can deliver this program by distance in 16 sites. That took the courage of the faculty and the confidence that they could pull it off. And I'm not saying it was easy, and there was a lot of debate inside the faculty about that. There probably still is. But I think that their role is the curriculum. Their role is the quality. And they've got serious questions about that. Those are legitimate questions. And there needs to be time to deal with those.
Thank you. Anyone else? I've heard a lot of criticism about the cost of the statewide functions in relation to the amount of funding that has been cut from the university. As you know, the legislature sets a lump sum and hands it over to the regents and says, here, make cash out of this. Do you have any ideas in advance of taking the post?
Representative Drummond, we reviewed some numbers that were provided by our administration on the reductions at statewide. I'm thinking something like 38%. I can't remember exactly. And so I wondered if the numbers were agreed upon, and that would be a start for us at inside our system, is to really fully vet those. The numbers should be known. They should be agreed upon as a start, because as I hear some people, that I hear them thinking that there's been consolidation in statewide, when the information that we're provided is that there's not been any consolidation in statewide. So beyond that, that would be my first step.
All right. Seeing no further questions, thank you very much, Ms. Perdue. All right. Okay, Representative Parrish.
The Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that Maureen Van Wagner, David Piazza, and Kent Runyon should be forwarded to a joint session for consideration to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and Karen Perdue should be forwarded to a joint session for consideration to the University of Alaska Board of Regents. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. We will sign paperwork right after we adjourn today. We do not have a meeting on Friday, so the next House Education meeting will be Monday, March 20th at 8 a.m. And with that, we are adjourned at 8:59 a.m.